Chapter 13. High Seats. Zaida and the two Windfinders departed from Elaine's apartments, graceful and outwardly unhurried, but with almost as little ceremony as they had entered, a bare wish that the light illumine Elaine and see her safe. For Atha An Mier, that was almost rushing off without a word. Elaine decided that if Zaida did indeed want to be the next mistress of the ships, the woman had a rival she hoped to steal a march on. It might be well for Andor if Zaida did attain the Atha An Mier throne, or whatever the sea folk called it. Bargain or no bargain, she would always be aware that Andor had helped her, and that had to be for the good. Though, if she failed, her rival would be aware of where Andor's favor had gone, too. Still, it was all if and maybe. Here and now was another thing altogether. "I do not expect anyone to manhandle an ambassador," she said quietly once the doors had closed behind them. "But in the future I do expect the privacy of my rooms. Even ambassadors are not to be allowed simply to wander in. Am I understood?" Rasoria nodded, her face wooden, but by the color that flashed into her cheeks, she felt the mortification of having let the sea folk pass as keenly as Birgitta, and the bond writhed until Elaine felt her own face growing red with a stinging embarrassment. "You did nothing wrong, exactly, but don't let it happen again. Light. Now she sounded a dolt." "We will speak no more of it," she said stiffly. "Oh, burn Birgitta and the bond." They would have had to wrestle with Zaida to stop her, but adding bone-deep humiliation to the other woman's headache was piling insult on injury. And Avienta had no call to grin in that smarmy way. Elaine did not know when or how her sister had learned that she and Birgitta sometimes reflected one another, but Avienta found the whole thing vastly amusing. Her sense of humor could be rough at times. "I think you two will make each other melt one day," she said, laughing. "But then you already played that joke, Birgitta Trahelion." Birgitta scowled at her, sudden alarm crushing embarrassment in the bond, and she returned such a look of innocence it seemed her eyes might fall out of her face. "Better not to ask," Elaine decided. "When you ask questions," Lini used to say, "then you have to hear the answers whether you want to or not." She did not want to hear, not with Rasoria studiously examining the floor tiles in front of her boots and the rest of the guardswomen in the anteroom failing to pretend not to be listening. She had never realized how precious privacy was until she lost it completely. Near enough completely, anyway. "I'm going to finish my bath now," she said calmly. Blood and ashes, what joke had Birgitta played on her? Something that made her melt? It could not have been much if she still did not know what it was. Unfortunately, the bathwater had gone cold, tepid anyway, hardly anything she wanted to sit in. A little while longer soaking would have been wonderful, but not at the expense of waiting while the tubs were emptied bucket by bucket and more hot water brought up. The entire palace must know she was back by now, and the first maid and the first clerk would be anxious to make their daily reports. Daily when she was in the city, and doubly anxious because she had been gone for a day. Duty came before pleasure if you were going to rule a country, and that went doubly for trying to gain the throne in the first place. Avienda pulled the towel from her head and shook down her hair, appearing relieved that she would not have to climb into water again. She started for the dressing room, shedding her robe before she reached the door, and had donned most of her garments when Elaine and the maids entered. With only a few mutters, she let Naris complete the job, although little remained beyond stepping into her heavy woolen skirt. She slapped the maid's hands away and tightened the laces of her soft knee-high boots herself. For Elaine it was not so easy, unless some emergency loomed, as Sanda felt slighted when she did not discuss her choice of dresses. With close servants, there was always a delicate balance to maintain. Without exception, a body servant knew more of your secrets than you thought she did, and she saw you at your worst, grumpy, tired, weeping in your pillow, in rages and sulks. Respect had to go both ways, or the situation became impossible. So Avienda was sitting on one of the padded benches, allowing Naris to comb out her hair, before Elaine could conclude on a simple grey in fine wool, embroidered in green on the high neck and the sleeves, and trimmed with black fox. It was not so much that she had difficulty deciding, but that Esanda kept putting forward silks sewn with pearls or sapphires or firedrops, each more ornately embroidered than the last. No matter that the throne was not yet hers, Esanda wanted to dress her every day as a queen readying for an audience. There had been a point to that, back when every day brought delegations of merchants to offer petitions or make their respects, especially outlanders hoping the troubles in Andor would not affect their trade. The old saying that who held Camelin held Andor had never really been true. And in merchant eyes, the chances she would actually gain the throne had diminished with the arrival of Aramilla's army outside the gates. They could count the houses arrayed on either side as easily as they could count coin. Even Andoran merchants avoided the royal palace now, keeping out of the inner city as much as possible, so no one would think they had gone to the palace, and bankers came well hooded in anonymous carriages. None wished her ill, that she knew, and certainly none wanted to anger her, but neither did they want to anger Aramilla, not now. Still, the bankers did come, and so far she had not heard of any merchants presenting petitions to Aramilla. That would be the first sign that her cause was lost. Getting into the dress took twice as long as it should have, since Esanda allowed Stephanie to help Elaine. The girl breathed heavily the whole time, unaccustomed as yet to dressing someone else, and fearful of making a mistake under Asanda's eye. Much more than of making one in front of her mistress, Elaine suspected. Apprehension made the sturdy young woman clumsy, clumsiness made her more painstaking, and taking pains made her worry more about mistakes, so the result was that she moved more slowly than the frail older woman ever had. Finally, however, Elaine found herself seated facing Avienda, letting Esanda draw an ivory comb through her curls. In Esanda's view, allowing one of the girls to slip a shift over Elaine's head or fasten her buttons was one thing, but risking either of them making a tangle in her hair quite another. Before the comb had made 24 strokes, though, Birgitta appeared in the doorway. Esanda sniffed, and Elaine could all but see the woman grimace behind her back. Esanda had given way on Birgitta being present at baths, however reluctantly, but the dressing room was sacrosanct. Surprisingly, Birgitta let the maid's disapproval slide past her without so much as a placating look. Usually she refrained from pushing Esanda an inch further than Elaine required. "Dialin has returned, Elaine. She's brought company. The high seats of Mantiar, Haven, Gilyard, and Northern." For some reason, the bond carried streaks of puzzlement and annoyance. Shared headache or no, Elaine could have jumped for joy. If Esanda had not had the comb deep in her hair, she might have. 4. She had never expected Dialin to accomplish so much. Hoped for it, prayed for it, but never expected it. Certainly not in one short week. In truth, she had been sure Dialin would return empty-handed. 4 gave her an equal footing with Aramilla. It was galling to think of being on an equal footing with that foolish woman, but truth was truth. Mantiar, Haven, Gilyard, and Northern. Why not Kandreid? That was the 5th house Dialin had gone to approach. No. She had 4 more houses, and she was not going to fret over the lack of one. "Entertain them in the formal sitting room until I can come, Birgitta." The small sitting room had been sufficient for Zyda. She hoped the wave mistress had not noticed the slight, but 4 high seats required more. "And ask the first maid to arrange apartments." Apartments? Light! The Atha'an Mier would have to be hurried out of theirs to make room. Until they left, most beds that did not have 2 occupants had 3. "Esanda, the green silk with the sapphires, I think. And sapphires for my hair, too, the large sapphires." Birgitta left, still feeling puzzled and upset. Why? Surely she could not think she should have left Dialin cooling her heels because of Zyda. Oh, light, now she was feeling puzzled over Birgitta feeling puzzled. If that was allowed to feed on itself, they would both end up dizzy. As the door closed, Asunder moved to the nearest wardrobe wearing a smile that might have been called triumphant. Looking at Avienda, who had motioned Naris and her comb away and was folding a dark gray scarf to tie her hair back, Elaine smiled herself. She needed something to take her out of that spinning loop. "Maybe you should wear silks and gems just this once more, Avienda," she said in a gently teasing tone. "Dialin won't mind, of course, but the others aren't used to Aiel. They might think I'm entertaining a stable hand." She meant it for a joke. They twitted one another about clothes all the time, and Dialin looked askance at Avienda, whatever she wore. But her sister frowned at the wardrobes lining the wall, then nodded and set the scarf down beside her on the tufted cushion. "Just so these high seats will be properly impressed. Do not think I will do this all the time. It is a favor to you." For someone just doing a favor, she pored over the clothes that Asunder pulled out with a great deal of interest before deciding on a dark blue velvet slashed with green and a silver net to catch her hair. They were her clothes, made for her, but since reaching Camelin she had avoided them as if they were crawling with death's head spiders. Stroking the sleeves, she hesitated as if she might change her mind, but finally she let Naris do up the tiny pearl buttons. She declined Elaine's offer of emeralds that would have suited the gown admirably, keeping her silver snowflake necklace and heavy ivory bracelet, but at the last minute she did pin the amber turtle to her shoulder. "You can never tell when it might be needful," she said. "Better safe than sorry," Elaine agreed. "Those colors look beautiful on you." It was true, but Avienda blushed. Compliment her on how well she shot a bow or how fast she could run, and she took it as no more than her due. But she had difficulty coming to grips with the fact that she was beautiful. That was a part of herself she had managed to ignore till recently. Asunder shook her head in disapproval, unaware that the brooch was an Angreal. Amber did not go with blue velvet. Or maybe it was Avienda's horn-hilted knife, which she tucked behind her green velvet belt. The white-haired woman made sure that Elaine wore a small dagger with sapphires on the scabbard and pommel, hanging from a belt of woven gold. Everything had to be just so to gain Asunder's approbation. Rasoria gave a start when Avienda entered the anteroom in her high-necked velvets. The guardswomen had never seen her in anything but Aiel garb before. Avienda scowled as if they had laughed, and gripped her belt knife firmly, but luckily her attention was diverted by a cloth-covered tray sitting on the long side table against the wall. Elaine's midday meal had been delivered while they were dressing. Whisking the blue-striped cloth aside, Avienda tried to interest Elaine in eating, smiling and pointing out how sweet the stew of dried plums would be, and exclaiming over the pieces of pork in the grainy mush. Slivers, they looked like. Rasoria cleared her throat and mentioned that a fire was burning nicely in the apartment's larger sitting room. She would be more than happy to carry the tray in for the Lady Elaine. Everyone tried to make sure Elaine ate properly, however they saw properly, but this was ridiculous. The tray had been sitting there some time. The mush was a congealed mass that would have stuck in the bowl if she turned it upside down. She had the high seats of four houses waiting on her, and they had waited long enough. She pointed that out, but offered to let the two of them eat, if they were hungry. In fact, she implied that she might insist on them eating. That was enough to make Avienda drop the cloth back over the tray with a shudder, and Rasoria wasted no more time either. It was only a short walk down the icy hallway to the formal sitting room, and the only things that moved, aside from them, were the bright winter wall hangings that stirred in the corridor's drafts. But the guardswomen formed a ring around Elaine and Avienda and kept watch as if they expected trollocs. It was only with an effort that Elaine convinced Rasoria there was no need to search the sitting room before she entered. The guardswomen served her and obeyed her, but they also were pledged to keep her alive, and they could be as muley over that last duty as Birgitta was over deciding whether she was warder, captain general, or elder sister at any given moment. Likely, following on the heels of the incident with Zyda, Rasoria would have wanted the lords and ladies waiting inside to surrender their weapons. The threat with the mush might have had its part, too. After a short argument, however, Elaine and Avienda swept in through the wide doorway together and alone. Elaine's feeling of satisfaction did not last, though. The sitting room was large, meant to accept dozens of people comfortably, a dark-paneled space with layered carpets covering the floor tiles and a horseshoe arch of high-backed chairs in front of a tall fireplace of white marble with fine red veins. Here, important dignitaries could be received with more honor than an audience before the throne because it was more intimate. The blaze dancing along the logs on the hearth had barely had time to take an edge off the chill in the air, but that certainly was not the reason Elaine felt as if she had been struck in the stomach. She understood Birgitta's puzzlement now. Dialin turned from warming her hands at the fire as they entered. A strong-faced woman with fine lines at the corners of her eyes and hints of gray in her gold hair, she had not waited to change on reaching the palace, and still wore a riding dress of deep gray that showed a few travel stains on the hem. Her curtsy was the merest bend of her neck, the slightest dip of her knees, but she intended no discourtesy. Dialin knew who she was as surely as Zyda did. Her only jewelry was a small golden pin in the shape of Taravin's owl and oak on her shoulder, a clear statement that the high seat of Taravin needed nothing more. Yet she had almost died to prove her loyalty to Elaine. "My Lady Lane," she said formally, "it gives me honor to present to you Lord Perival, high seat of House Mantiar." A pretty golden-haired boy in a plain blue coat jerked away from peering through the four-barreled kaleidoscope on a gilded stand taller than he was. He had a silver cup in his hand that Elaine hoped very much did not contain wine, or at least extremely well watered if it did. One of the side tables held several trays laden with pitchers and cups, and an ornate teapot she knew might as well be filled with water. "My pleasure, my Lady Elaine," he piped, blushing and managing a credible bow, despite a little clumsiness in handling the sword belted to his waist. The weapon looked much too long for him. "House Mantiar stands with House Trakand." She returned his courtesy in a daze, spreading her skirts mechanically. "Lady Catalin, high seat of House Haven," Dialin continued. "Elaine?" a dark-eyed young woman at her side murmured, touching her dark green divided skirts and making a fractional dip that might possibly have been intended for a curtsy, though perhaps she just meant to imitate Dialin. Or perhaps she wanted to avoid poking her chin against the large enameled brooch on the high neck of her dress, the Blue Bear of Haven. Her hair was caught in a silver net worked with the Blue Bear, too, and she wore a long ring with the sigil as well. A touch too much pride of house, perhaps. Despite her cool haughtiness, she was a woman only by courtesy, her cheeks still round with baby fat. "Haven stands with Trakand, obviously, or I would not be here." Dylan's mouth tightened slightly, and she gave the girl a hard glance that Catalin seemed not to see. "Lord Branlett, high seat of House Gilliard." Another boy, this one with unruly black curls, in green embroidered with gold on the sleeves, who hastily set his wine cup down on a side table as if uneasy at being seen with it. His blue eyes were too big for his face, and he nearly tripped himself with his sword, bowing. "It is my pleasure to say that House Gilliard stands for Trakand, Lady Elaine." Halfway through, his voice broke from treble to bass, and he blushed even harder than Perival. "And Lord Conyle, high seat of House Northan." Conyle Northan grinned over the rim of his silver cup. Tall and lean, in a gray coat with sleeves just too short to cover his bony wrists, he had an engaging grin, merry brown eyes, and an eagle's beak for a nose. "We drew straws for the order to be introduced, and I drew short. Northan stands with Trakand. Can't let a ninny like Aramilla take the throne." He managed his sword smoothly, and he, at least, had reached his majority, but if he was many months past 16, Elaine would eat his turned-down boots and his silver-knot spurs. Their youth was no surprise, of course, but she had expected Conail to have a graying head at his side to advise him, and the others to have their guardians looking over their shoulders. There was no one else in the room aside from Birgitta, standing in front of the tall, arched windows with her arms folded beneath her breasts. Bright midday sunlight flooding through the clear glass set in the casements made her a silhouette of displeasure. "Trekand welcomes all of you, and I welcome all of you," Elaine said, suppressing her dismay. "I will not forget your support, and Trekand will not forget." Something of her consternation must have crept through, because Catalin's mouth compressed and her eyes glittered. "I am past my guardianship, as you must know, Elaine," she said in a stiff voice. "My uncle, Lord Arendor, said at the Feast of Lights that I was as ready as I would ever be, and might as well have free rein then as in a year. Truth, I think he wanted more time to go hunting while he still can. He has always loved hunting, and he's quite old." Once again she failed to see Dailin's frown. Arendor Haven and Dailin were roughly of an age. "I have no guardian either," Branlett said uncertainly, his voice nearly as high-pitched as Catalin's. Dailin gave him a sympathetic smile and smoothed his hair back from his forehead. It promptly fell forward again. "Maeve was riding alone, as she liked to do, and her horse stepped into a gopher hole," she explained quietly. "By the time anyone found her, it was too late. There has been some discussion over who's to take her place." "They've been arguing for 3 months," Branlett muttered. For a moment he looked younger than Perivale, a boy trying to find his way with no one to show him the path. "I'm not supposed to tell anyone that, but I can tell you. You're going to be the queen." Dailin put a hand on Perivale's shoulder and he stood up straighter, though he still was shorter than she. "Lord Willin would be here with Lord Perivale, but the years have him bedridden. Age creeps up on us all, eventually." She shot another look at Catalin, but the girl was studying Birgitta now, her lips pursed. "Willin said I was to tell you that he sends his good wishes and also one he considers a son." "Uncle Willin told me to uphold the honor of Mantyar and of Andor," Perivale said, intent as only a child being serious could be. "I will try, Elaine. I will try very hard." "I'm sure you will succeed," Elaine told him, managing to put at least a little warmth into her tone. She wanted to chase them all out and ask Dailin some very pointed questions, but that could not be, not right away. Whatever their ages, they were all the high seats of powerful houses, and she had to offer refreshment and at least a modicum of conversation before they went to change from their journey. "Is she really the Captain General of the Queen's Guards?" Catalin asked, as Birgitta handed Elaine a thin blue porcelain cup of slightly darkened hot water. The girl spoke as though Birgitta was not there. Birgitta raised an eyebrow before leaving, but Catalin seemed practiced in not seeing what she did not want to see. The wine cup in her plump hand gave off the sharply sweet aroma of spices. There was not so much as a drop of honey in Elaine's miserable excuse for tea. "Yes, and my warder, too," she said, politely, as ready as she would ever be. The girl probably thought it a compliment. She deserved a switching for pure rudeness, yet you could not switch a high seat, not when you needed her support. Catalin's eyes flashed to Elaine's hands, but the great serpent ring did nothing to alter the coolness of her expression. "They gave you that? I had not heard you had been raised Aes Sedai. I thought the White Tower had sent you home when your mother died, or perhaps because of the troubles in the tower we hear about. Imagine, Aes Sedai squabbling like farm wives at market. But how can she be a general or a warder without a sword? In any case, my Aunt Evella says a woman should leave swords to men. You don't shoe your own horse when you have a farrier, or grind your own grain when you have a miller." A quote from Lady Evella, no doubt. Elaine schooled her face, ignoring the only slightly buried insults. "An army is a general's sword, Catalin. Gareth Bryn says a general who uses another blade is mistaking the job. The name seemed to make no impression on her either. Miner's children in the mountains of Mist knew Gareth Bryn's name. Avienda appeared at Elaine's side, smiling as though delighted at the opportunity to talk with the girl. "Swords are no use at all," she said sweetly. "Sweetly, Avienda!" Elaine had never realized her sister could dissemble so skillfully. She had a cup of mulled wine, too. It would have been too much to expect her to continue drinking bitter tea out of sisterly affection. "You should learn the spear, also the knife and the bow. Birgitta Trehelion could shoot your eyes out at 200 paces with her bow, maybe at 300. "The spear?" Catalin said faintly, and then in a slightly incredulous tone, "My eyes?" "You have not met my sister," Elaine said. "Avienda, Lady Catalin Haven. Catalin, Avienda of the Nine Valleys Tardad." Perhaps she should have done that the other way around, but Avienda was her sister, and even a high seat must settle for being introduced to the sister of the daughter heir. "Avienda is Aiel. She's studying to become a wise one." The fool girl's mouth dropped open at the start, her chin falling more and more with each pronouncement until she was gaping like a fish. "Very satisfying." Avienda gave Elaine a smaller smile, her green eyes sparkling with approbation above her wine cup. Elaine kept her own face smooth, but she wanted to grin back. The others were much more easily handled, much less infuriating. Perival and Branlett were shy their first time in Camelin, much less in the royal palace, hardly saying two words unless someone drew them out. Conail did think the claim that Avienda was Aiel must be a joke, and nearly got her belt knife in his brisket for laughing raucously, but luckily he thought that was a joke as well. Avienda adopted an icy composure that might have made her seem a wise one in her usual clothes. In velvets she appeared even more a lady of the court, no matter how she fingered her knife. And Branlett did keep sneaking sidelong peeks at Birgitta. It took Elaine a little while to realize that he was watching her walk in her heeled boots. Those wide trousers were actually quite snug over the hips. But she only sighed. Fortunately, Birgitta never noticed, and the bond would have let Elaine know even if she tried to hide it. Birgitta liked having men look at her. Grown men. It would have done Elaine's cause no good if her warder smacked young Branlett's bottom. Mainly they wanted to know whether Rhianna Corley was an Aes Sedai. None of the four had ever seen a sister before, but they thought she must be, since she could channel and carry them and their armsmen across hundreds of miles in a step. It was a good opportunity to practice evasion without actually lying, helped by the great serpent ring on her own finger. A lie would taint her relations with these four at the start, but it would hardly do to hope that rumors of Aes Sedai aid would filter out to Aramilla while spreading the truth about freely. Of course, all four were eager to let her know how many armsmen they had brought, a total of just over 3,000, nearly half of them crossbowmen or halberdiers who would be especially useful on the walls. That was a sizable force for four houses to have had ready to hand when Dailin came calling, but then no house wanted its high seat unguarded in these times. Kidnapping was not unheard of when the throne sat in question. Conail said as much, with a laugh. He seemed to find everything worth a laugh. Branlett nodded and scrubbed a hand through his hair. Elaine wondered how many of his numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins knew he was gone, and what they would do when they learned. "If Dailin had been willing to wait a few days," Catalin said, "I could have brought more than 1,200 men." That was the third time in as many sentences that she had managed to point out that she had brought the largest contingent by a considerable margin. "I have sent to all of the houses pledged to Haven."
"And I to every house pledged to Northen," Conail added, with a grin, of course. "Northen may not summon as many swords as Haven or Trekand, or Mantiar," he put in with a bow to Perival. "But whoever rides when the eagles call will be riding for Camelin."
"They will not ride very fast in winter," Perival said quietly, and astonishingly, since no one had spoken to him.
I think that whatever we do, we will have to do it with who we have now.
Conile laughed and cuffed the lad's shoulder and told him to buck up his spirits, because every man with a heart was on his way to Camelin to support the Lady Elaine. But Elaine studied Perival more closely. His blue eyes met hers for a moment without blinking before he shyly lowered his gaze. A boy. But he knew what he had ridden into better than Conile or Catalin, who proceeded to tell them yet again how many armsmen she had brought, and how many Haven could call on, as if everyone there except Avienda did not know exactly how many rode to each house's summons, in trained soldiers and farmers who had carried a halberd or pike in some war, and village men who could be drafted at need. Close enough to exactly, anyway. Lord Willin had done good work with young Perival. Now she had to keep it from going to waste. Eventually it was time to exchange kisses, with Branlett blushing to his hair and Perival blinking bashfully when Elaine bent to him, and Conile vowing never to wash his cheek. Catalin returned a surprisingly hesitant peck to Elaine's cheek, as if it had just occurred to her that she had consented to placing Elaine above her, but after a moment she nodded to herself, cool pride settling back on her like a mantle. Once the four were handed over to the maids and serving men who would take them to the apartments that Elaine hoped the first maid had had time to ready, Dialin refilled her wine cup and settled herself in one of the tall, carved chairs with a weary sigh. "As fine a week's work as I've ever done, if I do say so myself. I got Candreid out of the way straight off. I never thought Danine would be able to make up her mind, and it only took an hour to prove me right, though I had to stay three to keep from offending her. The woman must keep in bed till noon from being unable to decide which side of the mattress to climb down from. The rest were ready to see sense with only a little convincing. No one with any sense wants to risk Aramilla gaining the throne." For a moment she frowned at her wine, then fixed Elaine with a steady look. She never hesitated to speak her mind, whether or not she thought Elaine would agree, and plainly she intended to do so now. "It may have been a mistake to pass these kinswomen off as Aes Sedai, however side-mouthed we've been about it. The strain may be too much to ask of them, and it puts us all at risk. This morning, for no reason I could make out, Mistress Corley was staring and gaping like a goose girl come to the city. I think she almost failed at weaving the gateway to bring us here. That would have been wonderful, everyone lined up to ride through a miraculous hole in the air that never materialized, not to mention that it would have stuck me in Catalin's company for the light knows how long. Odious child. There's a good mind there if someone took her in hand for a few years, but she has a double dose of the viperous Haven tongue." Elaine gritted her teeth. She knew how cutting Havens could be. The whole family took pride in it. Catalin obviously did. And she was tired of explaining what on this day could frighten any woman who could channel. She was tired of being reminded of what she was trying to ignore. That bloody beacon was still blazing in the west, an utter impossibility both for its size and its duration. The thing had been unchanging for hours. Anyone who channeled for this long without a rest must have fallen over with exhaustion by now, and Rand Bloody Althor was right there in the heart of it. She was certain of that. He was alive, but that only made her want to slap his face for putting her through this. Well, his face was not there, but... Birgitta slammed her silver cup down on a side table so hard that wine flew everywhere. Some laundress was going to sweat to take that stain out of her coat sleeve. A maid would labor for hours to restore the side table's polish. "Children," she barked. "People are going to die because of the decisions they make, and they're flaming children, Conile worst of all. You heard him, Dialin. He wants to challenge Aramilla's champion like Arthur Bloody Hawkwing. Hawkwing never fought anybody's flaming champion, and he knew when he was younger than Lord Northen that it was a fool's game to rest so much on a flaming duel, but Conile thinks he can win Elaine the Flaming Throne with his flaming sword." "Yrgitta Trehelion is right," Avienda said fiercely. Her hands were fists gripping her skirts. "Conile Northen is a fool, but how could anyone follow those children into the Dance of Spears?
How could anyone ask them to lead? Dailin regarded them both and chose to answer Avienda first. She was plainly bemused by Avienda's garb, but then she was bemused by Avienda and Elaine adopting one another as sisters, by Elaine having an Aiel friend in the first place. That Elaine chose to include that friend in their councils was something she tolerated, though not without letting her toleration show. I became house seat of Taravin at 15, when my father died in a skirmish on the Altaran marches. My two younger brothers died fighting cattle raiders out of Murundi that same year. I listened to advisors, but I told Taravin riders where to strike, and we taught the Altarans and the Murundians to look elsewhere for their thieving. The times choose when children must grow up, Avienda, not we. And in these times a high seat who is a child cannot be a child any longer. As for you, Lady Birgitta, she went on in a drier voice, your language is, as ever, pungent. She did not ask how Birgitta presumed to know so much of Arthur Hawkwing, things no historian knew, but she studied her appraisingly. Branlett and Perival will take guidance from me, and so will Catalin, I think, much as I regret the time I'll have to spend with the girl. As for Conile, he's hardly the first young man to think he's invincible and immortal. If you can't keep him reined in as Captain General, I suggest you try walking for him. The way he was eyeing those breeches of yours, he'll follow anywhere you lead. Elaine shrugged off the pure fury welling up in her. Not her fury, any more than it had been her anger at Dailin in the first place, or her anger at Birgitta splashing wine about. It was Birgitta's. She did not want to slap Rand's face. Well, she did, but that was beside the point. Light! Conile had been looking at Birgitta, too? They are the high seats of their houses, Avienda. No one in their houses would thank me for treating them as less. Far from it. The men who ride for them will fight to keep them alive, but it is Perival and Branlett, Conile and Catalin they ride for, not me, because they are the high seats. Avienda frowned and folded her arms as though pulling a shawl around herself, but she nodded. Abruptly and reluctantly, no one rose to such prominence among the Aiel without years of experience and the approval of the wise ones, but she nodded. Birgitta, you will have to deal with them, Captain General, to high seat. White hair wouldn't necessarily make them any wiser, and it definitely wouldn't make them any easier to deal with. They'd still have their own opinions, and with years of experience to give them weight, most likely they'd be 10 times as certain they knew what needs to be done better than you do. Or than I do. She made a great effort to keep her tone clear of sharpness, and no doubt Birgitta felt the effort. At least the flow of rage through the bond suddenly diminished. It was only tamped down, not gone. Birgitta enjoyed having men look, at least when she wanted them to look, but she very much did not like anyone saying she was trying to attract their attention. Yet even so, she knew the danger to both of them of letting their emotions run too free. Dailin had begun sipping at her wine, still studying Birgitta. Only a bare handful knew the truth that Birgitta desperately wanted to keep hidden, and Dailin was not among them, yet Birgitta had been careless enough, a slip of the tongue here, a slip there, that the older woman was certain that some mystery hid behind Birgitta's blue eyes. The light only knew what she would think if she solved that riddle. As it was, the two were oil and water. They could argue over which way was up, and certainly over everything else. This time Dailin clearly thought she had won, foot and horse. "Be that as it may, Dailin," Elaine continued, "I would have been more pleased if you had brought their advisers with them. What's done is done, but Branlett troubles me in particular. If Gilliard accuses me of kidnapping him, matters become worse than they were, not better." Dailin waved that away. "You don't know the Gilliards well, do you? The way they squabble among themselves, they may not notice the boy is gone before summer, and if they do, none will repudiate what he's done. None of them will admit they were so busy in arguing over who's to be his guardian that they forgot to keep an eye on him. And second, none of them will admit they weren't consulted beforehand. In any event, Gilliard would stand for Zyda before standing for Marn, and they don't like Aron or Sarand much better. I hope you're right, Dialin, because I'm appointing you to deal with any angry Gilliards who appear. And while you're advising the other three, you can keep a thumb on Conail so he doesn't do anything completely harebrained. For all her talk, the first suggestion made Dialin wince slightly. The second made her sigh. It made Birgitta laugh out loud. If you have any problems, I'll lend you a pair of breeches and some boots and you can walk for him. Some women, Dialin murmured into her wine, can make a fish bite by crooking a finger, Lady Birgitta. Other women have to drag their bait all over the pond. Avienda laughed at that, but Birgitta's anger began to edge upward in the bond. A wave of cold air swept into the room as the door opened and Rasoria entered, coming to a stiff attention. "The first maid and the first clerk have come, my Lady Elaine," she announced. Her voice faltered at the end as she caught the mood in the room. A blind goat could have caught it, with Dialin smug as a cat in the creamery and Birgitta scowling at her and Avienda both, and Avienda choosing this moment to remember that Birgitta was Birgitta Silverbow, which on this occasion made her stare at the floor, as abashed as if she had been laughing at a wise one. Now and again Elaine wished her friends could all get on as well as she and Avienda did, but somehow they managed to rub on together, and she supposed that was really all she could ask from real people. Perfection was a thing for books and gleemen's stories. "Send them in," she told Rasoria, "and don't disturb us unless the city is under attack. Unless it is important," she amended. In stories, women who gave orders like that were always setting themselves up for disaster. Sometimes there were lessons in stories, if you looked for them.